To those Americans who say that it can't happen here, the answer is that something almost as harsh did overtake Britain in the 1940s and the Dutch Republic in the 1770s and 1780s. A generation earlier, few would have believed such comedowns possible. Such a painful upheaval overtakes a leading world economic power only when it is losing or has lost that global laurel. Whether that time is at hand for the United States or still decades away, no one can say. On the other hand, in light of the trends in manufacturing and the credit markets alike, there is little doubt left about the next dominant continent, Asia, and the next leading world economic power, China, possibly in the 2030s, barring some extraordinary disruption. This prospect, coupled with China's emergent role as a leading U.S. creditor, is part of what has to warn Americans, just as the surging economic growth of both the United States and Germany became a warning to Britain in the 1890s. Globally, the prospect has two faces. The first, of course, is the threat to the United States and the well-being of its people. The final act of a Volcarian opera, in which the fat lady of misfortune finally does sing, could be tragic not just for many in the United States, but conceivably for world stability. At the same time, there is a fascination, not least in the United States, with the implications of a new economic supremacy in Asia. Every year brings more attention to the rising skyline of Shanghai and China's extraordinary industrial growth, to the emergence of India as the communications back office of the English-speaking world, to the emergence of South Korea as the world's most advanced broadband telecommunications society, to the location of the world's tallest buildings in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, to the world's first 7-star hotel in Dubai, to the urban model of Singapore, to the money being made in Middle Eastern stock markets, and to the growing belief in the West as well as the East that global leadership will pass to Asia by 2040 or even 2030. The belief held in some Asian circles that the balance of power and wealth is shifting back to Asia for the first time since unbeatable Western warships passed through the Strait of Malacca in the 15th century could well turn out to be true. Not a few Asian Americans, educated or even born in the United States, are returning to grasp a future in Taiwan, Korea, India, and China. In the Middle East, the oil price surge that grew in 2003 to 2005 after the Bush administration failed in its Iraq-centered oil policy has elevated what was already a major new wave of regional economic development. Industrialization is growing, bolstered by oil and natural gas availability. Finance is becoming more locally oriented. Middle Eastern stock markets were among the world's best performing in 2004 to 2005, and less tributary to the United States and Britain. Cities and resorts are becoming sophisticated enough that tourism and duty-free shopping are booming from Bahrain to Abu Dhabi. The next decades should be extraordinary. The economic realignment favoring Southwest and Central Asia that flows from recent and projected oil and natural gas prices already resembles that occurring in East Asia because of the migration of manufacturing, not least from North America. If, as some believe, some 30-35% of world energy will come from natural gas by the 2020s, the principal beneficiaries will be major gas producers: Qatar, Iran, Turkmenistan, and Russia hold more than half of the known reserves, but Venezuela and North Africa are also important. The energy outflow of American dollars, in short, can only burgeon under an oil and gas regime. Besides the currency flowing to East Asia and the Middle East, two other buildups deserve note. Russia's international reserves ballooned from $18 billion at the end of 1997 to $124 billion as 2004 closed, principally because of oil and gas, while India's jumped from $24 billion to $126 billion in the same period. Computer software and office job outsourcing played major roles for India and probably will continue to do so. Even in biotechnology, India is surging, with local publications crowing about how secular Hinduism is compatible with science, while evangelical constituencies cripple U.S. stem cell research. With all of these transfers occurring or anticipated, by the 2010s it is hard to see what forces, except possibly military forces, could keep the no longer almighty dollar enthroned as the world's reserve currency. By the 2020s, if not earlier, China is expected to become the principal economic rival of the United States. The dynamics of this rise have been pursued by others and, save for U.S. politics and the dearth of capable national leadership, are beyond the scope of this book. Still, a few amplifications are in order. To begin with the challenge, economic and growth comparisons between China and the United States are complicated by the former's massively undervalued currency and huge purchasing power disparities. But two major financial firms, Goldman Sachs and HSBC, Hong Kong and Shanghai Banking Corporation, have ventured predictions. In late 2003, Goldman anticipated that China would pass Japan in GDP by 2015 and would overtake the United States by 2040. In 2005, HSBC calculated that bank assets in China would overtake those of the United States by 2034. None of this is far-fetched. Based on 2003 data, one analyst pointed out that China consumed half of the world's cement and one-third of its steel, and is now the world's biggest market for mobile phones and the second biggest for personal computers.